this voice came in my head and was like, you are the parent. So you call, you check, you're consistent. Hey, how are you doing? I love you. It's just reminding yourself, what are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to achieve? And however that can happen, do that. And get rid of your own, get out of your way.
What does it take to do the impossible? What does it take to level up your game like never before? What does it take for individuals, organizations, for even institutions to achieve paradigm shifting, nothing is ever the same again, breakthroughs?
Our mission is to decode the neurobiology of flow and cognitive peak performance. Access the minds of maverick scientists, groundbreaking innovators, and world-leading experts to understand what it takes to achieve ultimate human performance. So you can feel your best, perform your best, and accomplish your boldest goals. I'm your host, Rian Darris, and together with best-selling author Stephen Kotler, I present to you Flow Research Collective Radio. Hey there, Rian Darris here with the Flow Research Collective, and welcome to what is now episode 19 of Flow Research Collective Radio. Now, one of the biggest questions that we get here at the Flow Research Collective is some version of, I'm a parent, I've got big professional ambitions, balancing both of these things is tough, so how do I maintain peak performance, harness flow, and get after my goals while building a family and handling everything that comes with that? And so, if you have that question in mind, if you may have that question in the future, well, I've got good news for you today, because we are going to be addressing that topic of sustaining peak performance while parenting, how to handle big goals alongside a family. We're going to be addressing that topic head on today. And if there's anyone who has the art of both peak performance and parenting down, it is our guest today. And her name is Gabby Rees. Gabby is a volleyball legend, an inspirational leader, a New York Times bestselling author, a wife and a mother. And she's masterfully integrated athleticism, entrepreneurship, and family life. As a businesswoman, she's created HiX, co-founded XPT, and is an executive member of Laird Superfoods. And you may know Gabby's husband, Laird Hamilton, the legendary big wave surfer who was featured in Stephen's book, The Rise of Superman, and is also featured in one of Stephen's upcoming books. Stay tuned for that. Now, Gabby seems to have it all, and we are really curious in this episode to get under the hood with her and to get a sense for how she handles peak performance whilst parenting. In this episode, she's interviewed by myself, by Stephen, and some of the rest of the Flow Research Collective coaching team, so you're in for a treat with respect to the different voices in here. Now, before we kick things off, I want to take a moment to mention Zero to Dangerous. Zero to Dangerous is our flagship peak performance training here at the Flow Research Collective. During Zero to Dangerous, you work one-on-one with one of our PhD-level peak performance coaches, and they help you implement flow practices and protocols so that you can achieve and sustain peak performance within your life. It's designed for entrepreneurs, for leaders, for knowledge workers who have big professional ambitions and really want to be able to achieve those professional goals while creating time, space, and freedom in their personal lives. So if that sounds like you, well then Zero to Dangerous could be a fit. So if you want to apply for Zero to Dangerous and see if it is a fit, just go to getmoreflow.com. It takes about 60 seconds to pop through an application on that page, getmoreflow.com. We will jump on the phone with you, we'll chat, we will help you get clearer on your goals within about a 30-minute conversation, and then also let you know if Zero to Dangerous is a fit. So that's getmoreflow.com, G-E-T-M-O-R-E, flow.com, getmoreflow.com to pop your application through for Zero to Dangerous. And now let's jump through to the episode with Gabby. You're going to love it. So Gabby, welcome. It's great to have you here.
When you guys talk about mastering something, I think if you're going to be honest, this is what I do know about parenting. Let's start with this, and then you guys will take it away. It is actually not meant to be done correctly. we're not actually supposed to get it right. And I think when they handed me my little babies, I was like, I'm going to get this so much better than my parents did. I mean, and I'll do this and this and this. And then you actually learn that it's set up, the game is rigged, that that's not what you're doing. You're not getting it right.
Yeah. I think that's probably true about peak performance everywhere, right? You have a fixed idea of what peak performance is going to be, and you try and, right, if you're rigid that way, it's always going to, I mean, it'll clearly block flow because the frustration level get too high, but it'll block the performance as well, right?
And I think the whole thing is that what you learn is that if you come with the objective of like love and your best, and you sort of have to understand that you'll take it on the chin. Like, you wonder that as a parent, you're like, when did I become uncool? My music stinks. I don't know some of this verbiage. And my kids will have stories about things that they don't like about me or the way that I did it. Once you can kind of have your peace with that, because that's your personal growth part, it makes it a lot easier.
It is, by the way, funny to think that there are people in the world who actually know Laird and Gabby and actually think you guys are uncool. It's funny to know that, right? That,
yeah, my first question, Gabby, was actually going to be on that. You know, obviously, you and Laird are amazing figures in your own right. How, within parenting, as, you know, successful, accomplished, well-known peak performers, have you tried, or maybe you haven't tried, but if you have, how have you tried to not kind of overshadow your children, allow them to be their independent selves and, you know, do their own thing?
You know, this is an important question for anyone. Like, let's say someone listening is accomplished in any way, like you're a CEO, you're a business owner, whatever, is, you know, Laird and I are parents. You know, I was nursing my children and making oatmeal and talking about hard work and honesty and love and respect. And these are the messages in the house, right? But what I didn't understand, and both Laird and I came from, to some effect, certain dysfunctions in our own family lives. So you think as a parent, like, oh, I'm going to tell my kids, like, hey, it's just about you finding your own passion and trying to have meaningful relationships and all this stuff. But what we don't take into account is what the outside world is communicating back to them all the time. Like, what are you going to do? And let's say I have a daughter, for example, who's big and strong. Are you going to play sports like your parents, right? And so it's an interesting thing when, and it goes back to also, we only control a piece of their story. You know, it's this idea when someone says, oh, this spirit, this soul came in and it has its journey. That is a very difficult thing to like realize and come to terms with. Because if you think I create a safe, clean home full of love and nurturing and encouragement, that will take care of everything. And to have the sensitivity that if you've pursued heavily in your life in some weird way, that will negatively impact your child.
Have you found that traits that have led to your own success have translated into your parenting style in positive ways? Or have there also been, you know, things you've had to guard against?
I've had a tough learning curve, because I'll put it to you very simply. I'm what one would call a grinder. I mean, you know, it's like a hammer. And I've hammered my way out of a lot of places and to a lot of places. And someone positioned it to me that now if parenting was like washing the windows, would you use that hammer? And so it's actually being willing on the fly to uncomfortably develop new tools. And also, this is actually, whether you have children or not, it's letting go of old tools that we use for a past reality that we no longer need, and developing these new ones for the life in the present place that we're located at this very moment. And I think that as humans, we're really hard because we're like, hey, that hammer worked really good for me. I'll just keep doing that. And so I think that it's worked in my favor in certain ways. And certainly, you know, you're adapting.
How do you catch yourself, you know, and stop yourself from using that hammer to wash windows, so to speak?
It's not that you catch yourself so much as they tell you. And then if you're smart, hopefully, and you're not too prideful or you're not too stubborn, you start to try to put it in play a little bit. Like, you start to try to practice without them having to tell you. Usually it's a kid. So, you know, you're trying to encourage your kids to have a voice and their own point of view. And the flip side of that is that then they will freely use that against you and say, like, let me tell you what I think. And some of it is a form, and I don't mean this in a bad way, it's just manipulation. They're trying to leverage you. That's part of their job. But then part of that is like they're kind of speaking a truth to you that if you're willing to hear it, when they talk about your kids are your greatest teacher, I didn't actually believe that or you know, oh, Buddha says, I was like, yeah, what do these kids know? They don't have driver's license and they haven't earned a dollar. But what if you really pay attention, if they're teaching you something about yourself, that then if you're willing to hear it, even though it is very uncomfortable, it takes you through the next parts of your life to be a different and make possibly better version of yourself. So first it's initially a slap by them, and then hopefully it's a willingness to practice by you.
Are you cool with sharing some of the big lessons or insights that you've gleaned from your children?
Sure. Why not? I think it's, you know, I think I had this ideal. See, I will also say that I had a lot of insecurities as a parent because my mom left when I was 2 and came back when I was 7, and my dad passed away when I was 5. And I really understood about, like, to fracture a relationship. Like, my mother fractured a relationship with me that was very hard to recover. And I definitely didn't want to have that, right? Like, I was going to get this right. And so what happens is like, you're super diligent and sometimes you hit the marks, but then your kids develop. And let's say I have one daughter in particular who's highly emotional. I'm not. And so she said, yeah, all those ways that you took care of me were not my language. It wasn't right for me. And I'm hearing this like at the time, I think she was 13 years old. And that's very painful that you think for 13 years, I'm going to be diligent and do it. And they go, she said to me, I can say it very clearly, I never felt like I could actually reach you. And I understood what that meant. And so it was trying to listen more. She also said to me, and this is really important for parents to hear, she said, did it ever occur to you what might be very easy for you may not be so easy for me? Like, maybe I'm systematically, like, kind of organized in certain things, and she's maybe more free floating and feeling and artistic. You know, those are the moments where you're like, oh, wow, I have a lot to learn. And I thought I knew what, that's the other thing, is when you think you know what's going on and you're paying attention and all this, and they go, oh, and by the way, this and this and this was happening, and this is what I was feeling. And it's, you're like, you were like in a different house in some ways.
The balance with rest and recovery. Can you share some of the things you found useful there?
You know, for me, especially as the female component in my house, like, Laird is militant. He's in bed by 8:30. He's just, that's the guy. Like, he gets them in bed. If I'm traveling, they're all in bed by 8:30. It's weird. And as moms, typically moms are like, oh, I'm going to wrap the house up and ready for tomorrow, so we'll stay up beyond when everyone's sleeping. And all I can say is, when they go to sleep, go to sleep. And also, you kind of have every once in a while to go, this is how it's going to be in this time of my life. It won't be forever. So there's a, like, you're mixing both, right? Like, your world's going to be a little more in disarray, but if you get to bed earlier, it's better. And then sometimes it's going to be like, you're just going to be without a little more sleep, but it's a short window. And, you know, it's like not using caffeine past 2 o'clock, that'll screw up your sleep, you know, those kinds of things. So I think it's a blend. Get to bed, don't watch stuff late at night, you know, and then the usual sleep hygiene. Your room is cool, your room is dark, no lights, because even your skin, you know, picks up the light. So it's really making sure where you can control it, which is so little, that you do a really good job.
If you look at your sort of stack of habits or practices or rituals, what are some of the new ones that have come in since having children that weren't there beforehand that you're happy about?
Listen, it's all different. Like, when you have little kids, it's different. You're playing by different rules. And then as your kids get bigger, the rules change. But I would say overall is that I have shattered my own beliefs and expectation of what I thought it was going to be and who they were going to be. And I have stopped placing those on them. And I'm allowing what the story to be really is and who they really are without feeling... You know, a funny thing is sometimes it's really about how we think it's being reflected to the outside world. And so I think it's when you can come into the place of like, oh, my kid is this way. And like, that's great. And the other thing I've learned not to do is, especially if you have multiple children, you'll have like, oh, she's the nice one. And oh, she's the smart one. And all that is that you stop doing that because it changes. And they're all a lot of different things, and making sure not to label them. But also a real practice in listening. I don't try to fix everything. I don't try to get them to understand why they shouldn't feel that way. You know, it's all that stuff we get trained because we're also afraid for our kids to experience discomfort. And so I think that those practices have come in slowly And even better, the other night I had a situation where one of my daughters was telling me something that I kind of thought was like, you know, kind of BS, and I didn't agree with it. But rather than just like getting into all that, I just thought I'll just listen to this.
Gabby, I got a question. You were married when I met you, and I met you in the last century, right? That's a long damn time to be married. How'd you do it?
Okay, well, I'll be honest with you. First of all, I will be really direct. The initial is Laird and I have a lot of chemistry as people. All of you have experienced this if you're with a partner that, you know, I'm an incredibly analytical person. I couldn't help myself when it came to Laird. All of it on paper was wrong, okay? Laird had a four-month-old daughter. But everything on paper, a surfer, it's like, oh, okay. But also, I'd say that our value system, I was raised in the Caribbean, Laird was raised in Hawaii. We have very similar value systems. However, you learn to dance. So 5 years in, we almost got divorced, literally like papers filed kind of whole thing, because I didn't have a real communication system. Laird is very, no problem with feelings and confrontation. I didn't learn that. We didn't have that model. So you sort of have to learn, you know, how to do that and do that fairly. But honestly, you know, you don't want to ever play mean. You don't want to say stuff that people then distrust you for later, or in a way that they distrust you for later. And also, listen, selfishly, if we weren't somehow enhancing each other's lives for real, we wouldn't be together. Why are people together? And I think when everyone's like, oh, we have a family and all this, it's like, yes, but on some realistic, like high function, like some functional level, some practical level, we have to be getting something from it. And I love Laird, and I appreciate Laird and his intensity. And the other side of this is, I'm going to make myself happy. You make yourself happy. That is not the expectation from the other person. I would say I can't fix it, but I certainly can make your life better.
That's a great question, Stephen. I love that. Dr. Sarah Sarkis, welcome. Sarah, do you have a question for Gabby?
Oh, well, first of all, hi. I'm thrilled. I've loved everything that you've said so far and, you know, jive deeply. So I guess one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, what were some of the tools or techniques that you used? Because parenting is like going like 18 rounds with your shadow self, right? Like everything starts coming up. So what do you think, for any of the listeners, were some of the things, if they find themselves sort of operating from those old patterns, that's why you talked about your own attachment patterns as a child, right? Because they impact you and they come alive once you have a kid. You're like, oh, that's the ghosts and goblins under my bed. So what do you think is like a good primer? What kind of helped you really start to move that needle in terms of understanding that the past is actually never behind us? It's always right here, right now, playing out in our life.
Here's the thing for me. I think coming from sports, there's a level of self-discipline that can at times supersede your own emotional response, right? Like there's another little gatekeeper that's in there. Because you can be competing, let's say, and you're like, I'm uncomfortable, I'm afraid, I don't know that I can, I've got to focus, right? So I think that I utilize that skill to go, because mine is anger. Mine is like, and I don't mean explosive anger. I worry her up, and then my kids see this person that's like, and I learned this as a reflection from one of my daughters. She thinks it's very scary. It's very under control. I don't raise my voice, but it's the worrier up, right? Because it's the fear of vulnerability. It's the fear of intimacy. You know, like I do that to protect myself. So when I feel that coming up, I recognize and I go, oh, this is super uncomfortable for you, meaning me. And I did this the other night. I was sitting and she was saying something and I literally put my hand on the back of my neck to like hold myself. In two ways, like to tell myself it was okay, but also to hold the war, like to handle it in that like combative way. Okay, well, like get granular. What do you mean? Let's get the facts straight and all that. So it's completely unproductive. So it was like me recognizing, oh, here I come, and get rid of it. But also recognizing like, I'm the adult. I'm not the kid. I really have the desire to be the parent and to act and to show up like the parents. So even if my kids go, my mom, whatever, my one daughter that we've gone through some stuff with that we're sort of on the other side of it and like real traumas said, you know, at least I really appreciate you've always acted like an adult. And I thought, oh,
oh, wow.
it's a little victory.
That's a huge win.
I'll give you an example. I have a stepdaughter, and she's now 25. When she was 19, I've been in her life her whole life. She's my daughter. And she was kind of being an asshole, 19, like for a minute, like really a couple months. And, you know, in her narrative, I'm the step parent, but I'm really her parent as well. I'm her extra parent. And I'm like, I don't even want to talk to this kid and this and that. And this voice came in my head and was like, you are the parent. So you call, you check, you're consistent. Hey, how are you doing? I love you. It's just reminding yourself, what are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to achieve? And however that can happen, do that. And get rid of your own, get out of your way, like get out of your way. And my 6 and 7 year old self, she's okay. Like, it's okay.
Yeah, that's a good, great description of how we sort of metabolize our past as we mature, right? It's not just behind us. But one of the things that you said that I think is probably the crux of it is this, that your athletics sort of taught you this layer of self-awareness, both mind, body, and psychology, and that that allowed you to have the capacity to observe what was happening as it was happening, and that that gave you a layer of self-regulation. So anybody out there who's worked with me, you can see that I'm not actually full of shit. I mean, I am, but I'm actually, when I talk about these layers of self-regulation being the crux of everything, it really matters. This is, Gabby is saying, this is how she started to be able to really be present in the moment in a different way.
All right, let me ask you guys both a question on this one. Do you think in a training sequence, if you're working with people as coaches one way or another, do you think you can actually teach the self-regulation stuff first? Or do you have to start with, there's this thing people are dying to get better at, right? For that, the athletic pursuit for Gabby was volleyball. For me early on, it was skiing more than anything else. And a lot of the kind of self-regulation stuff that came up for me, like I didn't want to regulate it myself until I started to realize that like the voice in my head was getting in the way of what I was trying to do on the mountain. And it was actually putting me in the hospital, right? Like when I started making that, I was like, oh, I got to get control of this, right? So my question is, we often want to teach people self-regulation first before there's the other things, because we know it'll make everything else so much easier. But I wonder if that's actually possible for people. I wonder, because it's so hard and painful to learn the self-regulation stuff. You got to have something you really want, right, that lines up with your intrinsic motivation and your goals and your values, I would guess. It's the same thing with teaching people grit, right? If I could train flow in any order that I'd want to, I'd train grit before I train flow. But nobody will learn the lessons of grit until they've gotten the drug of flow, because everybody's more than happy to work hard after they've tasted the high. But until that happens, it's hard to do. And I wonder if self-regulation is the same way.
First of all, I think it has to be an internal desire, regardless of your pursuit, right? Like, I think it actually has to show up for you as a person, because I know plenty of people that are in these situations and it doesn't show up for them. I don't know. I mean, I would love to hear Sarah's, but I think it's also oftentimes, I mean, for me, it was a survival mechanism that I learned to put in other things. But I think as you venture and you give people a template or concepts that you say, hey, if you go into your personal relationships with this, in your parenting, in your work life, and maybe give them tool so that when they're in that situation, they can practice these concepts, because it's hard to come up with those ideas just on your own. But if someone goes, oh, wait, here, maybe I can try this. And if they get that impact or that result differently, and maybe usually more positively, then they can start to maybe put it that way if they don't have that kind of real pursuit. I don't know.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so what I would say is that it depends. Like, I think, you know, having been decades as a shrink and more recently as a coach, you really have to see where somebody's at when they come in. And that's, you're sort of trying to listen for where they are in the game of self-awareness anyway, and what gets in the way. You're absolutely right, Stephen, that all of us hold these sabotaging patterns, which they are actually, it's like we hold the hand that holds us down, but most of us think it's outside of us. And so, yes, being able to show and highlight those dynamics happening live in the coaching is a fantastic way to deepen that intrinsic motivation. And also the, when you talked earlier about the purpose, sort of like, why are you doing this? The good news is I have yet to meet parents who say, I just knew from conception that I wanted to be a shitty parent. Most of us stumble into our foibles as parents because we're just human and it's a blood sport. So you usually have a high level of motivation from people. Their purpose is they want to be a better person, to be a better parent. And it turns out that for the vast majority of us, that's an incredible motivator that really sustains people for quite some time. And in general, what I've found is that I think you can do it if you're skilled and you've had enough hours in the chair. You can do these things simultaneously. You can play with where people are at, both building self-awareness, building self-regulation. Gabby's already talked about something that, you know, the observing ego, where you can observe yourself as it's happening. That's a practice. And these are all things that with both psychological work and then daily behavioral practices, everybody can learn it. It's doable. So it's a great question.
I think if people are, maybe they don't have kids, but they're talking to people with kids. I think it's, I've had somebody say this to me. And it was really, really, really I could have kids that were radical and like drive fast vehicles and jump off stuff. Like Laird and I could handle that. And what you realize in parenting, a lot of times is you get the things that you actually, you can't handle. Like that's why you kind of get them. And the minute you flip it and you look at it and you kind of go, oh, here's another opportunity for me to learn something new. There's something that's profound happens to you as a parent. And then the other thing is to try really hard not to lock it down. Meaning if you're willing to look at things and, you know, stay malleable and being willing to change, because you understand once you're thick into parenting, why other parents have said, well, that's how we do it in this house, because it's easier in a certain way. I believe you pay a different price later of connection or intimacy with your grown children. But I also understand it because to play this other way, you're constantly sort of in school, if you will, and it can be exhausting and you just want to go, hey, I'm the boss and this is how it is. And you have to always kind of manage that urge.
Yeah, I think there's a line here that you're talking about that I also find is the space where all my personal growth has happened, which is the line between you want your children to have the space to be themselves, and yet there is in any organization, in any team, in any group, in a tribe, there has to be some level of compliance. And so you toe this very delicate line. And you're right. When I find myself being like, that's just the way it's going to be, when I start being like a dictator, it's often because I'm going heavy on compliance and I'm not actually thinking about how to really listen to what is going on with my child.
Guys, I've got a question about what are some thoughts on inducing flow state with your kids at a young age?
I feel like maybe flow is what children do in play, and yeah, children come in and out of it quite naturally. It's just us old creaky adults that actually have to sit here and practice it. So I feel like it's probably, it's present anytime you're swept up in the moment and you're fully absorbed in what your children are bringing to your environment in that moment. So I'm all for it. I'm not an expert. My lane isn't sort of education in kids. So I'm probably not the best person to talk about education, but just in parenting and just present in children, I see them in a natural state of flow. It seems totally accessible to them.
So kind of encourage play and definitely don't block it or stamp it out, which I'm assuming is tempting at times, depending on what time it is and whatnot. Gabby, have you got any thoughts on that one?
Well, you would think I'm not like really concerned about performance, like hitting all the marks and things like that. And what I just try to always focus on is my kids trying to understand who they are themselves in relationship to the world and what they like, or, you know, what feels right and good to them. And, you know, it's interesting. I even battle with this idea. My kids were mostly homeschooled, but my youngest daughter was asked to go to conventional school, even though it's kind of wonky right now. And you realize, like, in a way, sometimes when we overthink it, or we want our kids to be like, oh, you're going to do this sport and this instrument and that language and all that stuff, I think sometimes it's overkill. Like, because when you hand you a new baby, right, like, it's infinite possibilities. So I understand the urge. But sometimes it's like, well, let them, like Dr. Sarah said, like, they already have a lot of it in them.
It's certainly true from David Epstein's fantastic work on in range, on match quality, that, you know, for anybody, if anybody's going to excel, there's going to be a huge sampling period where they test tons of different things out anyways, right? The process Gabby was talking about. And certainly the literature on peak performance shows that when you get that match fit, when your passion lines up with your values and your skills, then you can really start seeing acceleration. And until you get that fit, it's going to look like kids are wandering around aimlessly testing out this and this and this and this, right? But I would assume the urge to really steer and drive the bus is pretty overwhelming.
Well, and also I'm going to push on something, which is, you know, I am always feeling like I'm trying to be in the pursuit of excellence. And when I say that, it's like I mean it like self-mastery, and I don't mean this like I'm great at everything. I just mean like, can I be the best, you know, friend or partner or mom or whatever it is that I'm doing. However, as a parent, like, I'm not my kids' professors or coaches. I'm their mom. And so my job as their mom is to teach them how to, like, express their feelings and to, you know, do, like, tasks at home and to love them. And so the other separation is when you're their parent, you are not these other things. And so I would like to raise kids that, okay, Andre Agassi wins the U.S. Open, does all stuff. Oh, I'm miserable the whole time. For me as a mom, that is not a success. As a tennis coach, you were successful. And so that's the other thing, because we've hodgepodged all this together with helicopter parenting and high performance children, but we're forgetting about the human being. And as a mom or a dad, I think that's our job.
I agree completely. I'm really glad you said that. I always say to my son, I'm like, you have lots of friends. You have this, you have that. You have one mother. That's it. There's just one mother on planet Earth who you landed with. And that role, it turns out, is enough. I mean, it's enough. I can't bear being everything else. I have my hands full with being the one role of being a mother. And I also want to reiterate that whenever you feel like shoehorning something with your kid, you know, you're ending up as their tutor, as their coach, as their everything, I live in the world that spends the child who becomes the adult. They untangle those knots for years with me in therapy. It does harm children. They really carry scars forward of that take years to really undo when they feel as though they had to live to the expectation that the parents had all the time. So I'm really glad you highlighted that, because I think it's really important.
Hey there, Rian here. Excuse me for interrupting Gabby and Stephen for a moment. I wanted to take a second to talk to you about Zero to Dangerous. Zero to Dangerous is our flagship peak performance training. And in it, you will learn how to access flow reliably so you can move towards spending the majority of your workday deep in that zone, fully honed in, focused and wildly productive. And if you have children, if you have a family life, we very much so cater to that, and we give you really practical tools and strategies that allow you to get as close as possible to having and doing it all. So if you want to learn those strategies and work with one of the coaches that we have here at the Flow Research Collective, like Dr. Sarah Sarkis, well, then go to getmoreflow.com. You can apply for Zero to Dangerous there. That's getmoreflow.com. You can apply for Zero to Dangerous there. We would love to chat with you. For now, let's dive straight back in with Gabby. Sarah, I'd love to ask, and Gabby, of course, about how you guys get into flow yourselves while raising children. And we've got one interestingly specific question. Do you feel like a messy house messes with your ability to get into flow?
First of all, I love that question, because there's so much buried in that. But since this is not an individual therapy session, I won't take the whole question apart. I would say observe even the need for the orderliness. That is telling you something about yourself. It doesn't mean you have to learn to get into flow in a pigsty. That's not what I'm saying. But there's data there for you about control and order and all these really important psychological tools that tie back to what Stephen was saying about understanding your patterns of sabotage in order to be able to achieve the things that you consciously, which we all know is only 5% of our brain, say you want. With that being said, there's literally no secret. You know, it's all the day in and the day out practices. Stephen and I joke on probably every podcast that the ability to maximize flow in your daily life really starts the night before. It starts with the list. It starts with sleep. It starts with hydration. It starts with nutrition. And then it resumes for, it happens all while you're asleep. You have a glymphatic system. It works in your brain. It's got all during deep sleep. This all matters. Then when you wake up, there's things you can also do to prime yourself. Get sunlight, do a morning movement and breath work practice. So there's just endless opportunities to practice the day in and day out behaviors that prime our brain for that. That's my short slash long answer. I like the sauna. I get in my sauna. So, you know, you got to play with it and you have to practice it. And you have to be willing to have frustrating episodes where you can't seem to get that state and that you're willing to tweak and course correct. Everything is data. Don't take it personal.
I think for me, it's adaptability. You make a lot of plans. We have a lot, like everyone, a lot of things happening. I do need, because I notice everything. I think women notice all the little weird details. Even like if I even say, like I joke, like if I walk in and I'm looking at the floor, I'm looking for dirt on the floor versus if I look up and I see like the light. And so it's also that, you know, we're always trying not to be in fight or flight. Like I joke when I'm wiping my counters down is because I can control this much of the real estate. So I know that. So I notice if I'm off middle a bit, but I do have, this is like practical stuff. We have common areas in our house. So the living room, the kitchen, these areas are common. By the end of each day, I ask my children, make sure these areas are clean again, so that I don't have so much visual noise, but also they have their rooms and they have areas that they can do that. But I do believe in keeping a certain amount of order in common spaces. You know, stuff has to get done, right? And if I'm in my vehicle alone, I use that as a time to check in with myself and oftentimes to do an active meditation, because I, quite frankly, could talk about it, sell it as a part of my business. I have very little time to have like a meditation practice. So you find those places and spaces that I'm by myself, no radio, no phone. I'm driving in my vehicle. I check in, how am I feeling? Do I need to talk to someone? Do I need to clear the decks? Am I off? Have I trained enough? How is my eating? Am I tired? So using these small pockets for active meditation to kind of recalibrate in the middle, I find to be helpful.
Stephen, you're going to jump in there, I think.
I was listening to Sarah. She was just talking about don't judge what's coming in. Just treated as data. And I was talking to a really smart psychologist named Nick Wigall today, and he had the best way of talking about it. He said, one of the things that most people don't realize is they shoot the messenger. They get their negative feeling and they blame themselves for the negative feeling and they shoot the messenger and they never get to the point that it's data. And I thought that was a really good way of thinking about it.
That's even a good point. As a parent, I can ask my kids to do something, and if they really are busting my chops, like in a response, I will even ask them, is anything that I'm asking really unfair? And then I just walk out, because it is, but some of it is just data. It's like an exchange. We're living in this house. It's a tribe. And I think as parents, it kind of sometimes is the bummer to be, you know, the gatekeeper of a lot of things, but sometimes it's just a simple pushback, like, hey, is what I'm saying unreasonable? And then you just leave, and then they will typically kind of figure it out. So I think it's important to even do it there too.
So the challenge skills balance, right? Flow's most important trigger, right? For those unfamiliar, we pay the most attention to the present. Thus, we get the most flow when the challenge is slightly harder than our skill set. from the outside, it looks like almost everything a parent does is outside the challenge skills balance. Do you ever get that right? Can you get it right for long stretches of time? I often wonder this, you know, Joy and I have been together for 16 years. I think we've been married for 15 years. So I often think this is true in long relationship, in a long marriage as well, that it's really like, it's hard to get that particular thing right. And also, I don't exactly know what it means in the context of a relationship, right? Clearly, like the challenge skills balance in a relationship is a different thing than in a sport or in business or whatever.
Wait, I'm going to let Dr. Sarah answer the official, but I can tell you as a parent or as a partner or in part of a family, there's moments that you exchange, like, it's a very simple thing. It's a fluid conversation. It's a laugh. It's like a pitch that's harmonious. And that's kind of it. And if you can pay attention enough to notice it and just be like, oh, there's a harmony in there. And you have those in relationships of all kinds. I think it's really a beautiful thing. And I think we're always all looking for these grand moments. And at the end of the day, really what you realize is that if you have those a few times a day, that's great.
I wanted to address something specifically that's sort of an undertone here. When I was in grad school, I remember, I didn't have kids at the time. I remember reading this statistic about attachment and, you know, attachment for people out there. It's like a real thing that's happening between you and your child. And the way that humans attach is something that psychologists call modeling. And so it's wordless. By the time they have language, they've already downloaded tons of information that has literally shaped their brain, our brain. And I read this statistic that was incredibly comforting. So if you can make contact with the ball, so just a base hit, you don't even have to get a grand slam. You mentioned it earlier, Gabby, your daughter's sort of saying something that you maybe think is a little bit of BS, and you decide inside yourself, you're like, you know what? I'm just going to listen to her. That's a win. And if you can do that 30% of the time, the other 70% is repairing. You show your children how to apologize. You show them that being imperfect is built into the human recipe. You show them how to apologize. You show them that you are doing your best, but you don't have an instruction manual. And this is the birthplace of where grit is in the failures, just like in the intrapersonal, right? We learn much more when we fail than when we win. And so it's actually that the ratio is 30 to 70. All you have to have those little moments, if they're 30% of the time, you're a top hitter. And 70% of the time, you're just having an opportunity to model all these other secondary skills that turn out to be critical to adaptation, psychological flexibility. And the big one is the ability to sustain connection and attachment through difficult times. Otherwise, the divorce rate would be 100%. So it's such a great question. I'm so glad it came up.
Do you want to mention something on that, Gabby?
I think what's beautiful what Dr. Sarah just said is, see, if you're in a relationship and you're raising children, let's say something happens, sometimes the tendency, because I've thought about it, would be like everyone goes to their corners and looks their own wounds versus nobody blames anybody for the discomfort or the pain or, you know, whatever the situation is, and that you find a way within it. Like she said, if you can stay connected and teach your children, even through uncomfortable or very painful times, to somehow stay connected, that in itself, I think, is a real feat, because it'd be easy to overlook it. But having experienced it a few different times, you realize like that is what makes the difference, is these intersections of personal suffering and then the ability for everyone to kind of get through it together.
And it turns out statistically, it's the vast majority of the time that we're interacting intimately is the repair. It's the 70%. And so statistically, you have the most leverage there.
I want to ask both you guys about time. How do you just carve out the time to, you know, create the space to do the quote unquote flow blocks, or just have enough of a block of time to be able to even, you know, get into flow in the first place?
You know, listen, I know people get mad at me sometimes about gender specific, but I don't really care, because I say, like, if you nurse a child and you're pregnant and you bleed once a month, like there might be some biological differences and people just sort of have to deal with that, whatever. I feel completely secure in my strength as a person, whatever. But I will say this, that it is easier, if so it appears, mostly for men to like protect their real estate as far as their own self-care program. Mostly it's not a knock on them. It just seems to be the way it is. And what I say, especially to women, is if your kids are okay and you have 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 10 minutes, it's about consistency a little bit along the way. It isn't big like blocks and chunks of hours, because that's usually not realistic, especially when your children are small. And you do it unapologetically. I start with that because then it becomes the way that it is. Your partner accepts it. The children go, oh, that's what mom does. She takes care of herself. And unless something's really serious going on, you schedule it like everything else. Don't compromise it. And you don't feel guilty for it, even though you will, because for whatever reasons, mothers, we feel guilty about everything. You know, am I too nice? Am I not nice enough? Like, whatever. That's just part of the, you know,
game.
It just is. It's, I don't know what it is, but
yep.
Yeah. And so it's like you're ferocious. And I always say, like, no blood in the water. Like, don't make anyone think that you feel bad about it, that this is a part of your everyday life. People, this is not about like it's an event. It's that's what they call it, lifestyle. They have to put it in there. And now they are, going back to Dr. Sarah's point, modeling to their children, this is what people do. They people, oh, I inherited their genetics. No, you inherited their lifestyles. And as a mother or whoever, a father, you can show your children that part of being a responsible human is having a self-care practice, period.
I love everything you said. Self-care, it's not a passive act. Oh, I can't find the time. Oh, blah, blah, blah. You have to take it. You have to claim it with both hands and unapologetically, because you will teach your children to relentlessly apologize for their own needs for the rest of their life. If you're constantly apologizing for what you need, you take it and you claim it. It's an act of aggression. And you see it that way because you need that much grit to do that, to make yourself a priority. It doesn't mean you have to come first. You could be the 20 minutes at the end of the day that is just your time regardless. But selflessness has gotten a bad rap, and selfishness has also. They are actually morally and ethically neutral concepts. And then we put onto it the things that it means to us. Take the time every day, wake up and take it. Don't ask for it. Nobody's going to give it to you. Take it.
So I want to ask you guys a little bit about how you think about location with respect to living a high flow lifestyle for yourselves, and then also with family. And both of you have a connection to Hawaii, and you're based in LA, Gabby, I believe. I'm curious about how you think about what is helpful within a location within which you live for cultivating a high flow lifestyle for yourself, for your kids. What kind of things would you want to have near you within that area? What kind of things would you want to have access to? A lot of people are obviously moving at the moment, and
myself
thinking
included.
About that. Yeah, exactly. Yourself included.
Literally, so, yeah. Right now.
So yeah, curious how you think about getting an optimal setup from a living and location and house standpoint for a high flow lifestyle with the family.
I mean, I give Laird a lot of credit for this part of our family dynamic, because his sort of ruthless connection to nature. Even when we met, I only had my stepdaughter, and that was only part time. I lived in the Palisades in California, which at the time was, it's gorgeous, but he moved us more north near more nature. And of course, I would oversimplify it by saying, being outside, being in nature, being in that type of nurturing environment. But if people live in cities, you know, for me, then at least it becomes about, do you have a gathering location? Everyone talks about the kitchen, right? Food. Is it then making sure that family dinners are really important? And like I said, if you live in a city, let's say you're a single busy parent, if you're in a city, it's just that time together, looking, no phones, checking in with one another. That feels really important to our family, and I certainly don't think it's unique.
Yeah, I think the nature piece there, Gabby, is probably a big
but
one.
it's also a luxury, right? Like I never like to say about things and be like, well, you know, just go on a hike. It's like, I'm literally no kid by the time they're whatever age, 12 or 13, wants to go on a sweaty hike, usually with their parents. Like it's the way it is. So it's just about understanding that you learn to congregate in and around and near nature. But having said that, I always want to honor how do people find those spaces wherever they are. And it just feels like those nice places to connect simply. It's all about simplicity.
Sarah, I'm curious on your thoughts on this one, given that you've moved from Hawaii to the East Coast. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Whoa, yeah. Sarah.
I know. I'm from Boston, so it's not that big of a, you know, but I did spend 10 years on Oahu and I loved it. And I raised our son there from the time that he was 2 to he's 12 now. Well, you know, when the weather's nice, the truth is it's quite frankly easier to get outside. But because I'm a shrink, I can sort of never leave the bits and pieces that are inside our carcass. So also returning to that sense of like, what is your motivation and what is your purpose? And then once we have that shared ideal, like my husband and I have this shared ideal that nature, no matter what we have to do, is important to get out into. But we don't have to, you know, climb Kilimanjaro to get that. We can just go around the block. We take our bikes after dinner most nights and we just ride our bikes. I say, especially if he feels edgy and cagey, like a lot of us do right now, I always say to him, notice, observe how you feel right now in your own skin and bones. And then I just leave it. And then when we come back in and it's clear 10 minutes into the ride, his whole mood perks up. He's more present. He's talking. He's not thinking about the iPad or the pals or whatever he's leaving behind. And by the end, I say, and how do you feel now? And it's my hope to become, you know, to be reminding him, just get outside, take your shoes off, just in your own yard. I've lived in Honolulu. I actually lived in an urban setting in downtown Honolulu. And here I live much more in sort of the woods or the suburban area. So really, from a psychological standpoint, if your legs can get you outside, you can go outside. So and be out there, be present in it. There isn't any way that it won't influence you. It's a whole body sensory experience. That's why heat or cold doesn't matter. Nothing wakes you up like a 20 degree day out. So just really stay present in that you have a shared purpose to make this part of your life. And it'll be amazing. You will land the plane where you point it. So if that's your purpose, you'll start doing it.
So I'm curious, guys, what performance blocking habit or whatever, self-sabotaging negative habit do you see crop up most with parents that you just observe in general where you kind of feel, oof, they would, you know, they'd be much better off if they didn't do that?
Okay, so I sort of make a habit of not necessarily talking about my, you know, I don't want to observe something about my client and then a client's like, I heard you reference me the other day. So I'm going to use myself. I have two things that really, for a long time, I had no idea they were operating, but it had profound immunity in my life. And then as I became aware of it through the process we spoke about earlier, the self-awareness thing. One is impatience. I get so impatient with like the agenda I think has to happen. And it just always, you never land that plane on the Hudson. It just always ends up being a disaster. And then the second one is being too busy. If I don't carve out periods of time to be not busy, I do this with my work, Stephen gave me the suggestion with reading and writing to essentially create time every week to be lost without an agenda, see where you land. And once I did that also in parenting, it started to move the needle on some of my own just really bad habits. And they're just not helpful.
Yeah, I got a question for Gabby, just out of curiosity, because you've accomplished so much in your life. What's still out there that you really want? What haven't you accomplished that you really want? Like, what mountains are left that you have in your sights, just out of curiosity?
Well, I think there's a few. There's like my personal ones, which is to navigate, continue to try to navigate, because it's an ongoing aging and keeping the relationship with Laird thriving, not just going. And of course, as my kids are moving into launch pad times, I mean, I have one out of the house and then one who's going to be 17 and one who's 12. I think there's always sort of that always feels important to make sure that we're always paying attention in the near future, like especially that they begin to launch out into the world. And then from a work standpoint, I think, you know, being a business owner and seeing those things thrive. But I know, Stephen, this may not make, I don't know if this sounds silly, but I've actually never been a person who's looking to achieve a lot of great things. I'm just looking to do the things that I am pursuing to the best of my ability. That's me personally. I was raised in a high performance family and people weren't saying like, oh, you can be the president or win a Super Bowl. And so I went, oh, I'm aiming my attention at this. I'm going to do this the best that I can and see where that goes. And usually if I keep my head down and work hard, you know, some things have worked out.
We got a question that says that she has a 2.5-year-old daughter and is wondering if it's realistic to expect never to lose her shit on the toddler. I suppose that's a question about self-regulation.
I think what's the definition of lose your shit? I think, you know, listen, every kid can bring you to a breaking point because it's your kid and you love them and it is so important, that job. But yeah, I mean, you don't have to like lose your mind. I don't know. I think a road trip always is, I don't know, Dr. Sarah Thurman on this one, like the road trip is always my favorite. Like, you know, one screaming kid, maybe you could have a nice squabble, like, oh, a trip, like airplane with your partner. I don't know. I think it would be fair to say that we have to forgive ourselves a lot of times, but we don't have to do things that are everlasting and permanently bad. No, you don't.
I'm curious if you've got any input on the flow and learning question for kids.
Well, I think also, and all of you have experienced this as individuals, as your children get older, what you start to realize too is they get whispering from the universe, if you will, about their life and who they are and who they're going to be that you don't see that they do. And we all have that. And so when you talk about autonomy, there's times that you actually have to trust them about something, obviously if it's not destructive, that you don't even know anything about that they might have an inkling to already. That can be very challenging. But I know I clearly had it as a very young child. I had things. I know Laird had his own sort of ideas about his life early. And so I think that that's just a reminder sometimes that, you know, like you're showing up for your kids, you're loving them, you're creating a safe environment for them, you're trying to be your best example for them. And then there's a level of like faith.
I've got a question. You're married to Laird, who is Canadian snowboard Olympic team, which includes, you know, Mark McMorris, who's the winningest snowboarder in history and is known for big air. What I'm asking is, both in yourselves, you guys are fairly aggressive as people, and you're in very close proximity to tremendous amounts of kind of risk and aggression. So how do you think about with your kids, what risks are okay and what aren't? How do you draw that line? Do you think it's different because of your exposure to such extreme risk taking?
I mean, in our house, what we told the girls very early, and again, girls different than boys, generally, again, sorry, but it's been my observation. Girls do oftentimes a lot more assessing than hugging, if you will. So my girls have all been assessors early. You could see it early. I mean, driving vehicles, Reese was driving vehicles at 3 years old and things like that. But it's also the individual kid and their skill set. One of my daughters is much more physically skillful at certain things than some of the others. So it's like, I think it's not a one size fits all. It's the person, it's the way that they're approaching. Because you can see somebody doing something that's very dangerous, but it's just an expansion of their actual skill set. And we used to tell the girls, if you're really smart and you do this safely, you will be able to do very dangerous and fun things. If you act stupid, you will not, and foolish, you won't get to. So really instilling in them early that sort of assessment of things and moving into things, not just going from zero to 100 and things like that. And I'll be honest with you, after living a minute, I would much rather deal with a kid who wants to go fast and high than a kid who is depressed or doesn't know what they want to do or is impulsive. And somebody told me a really great bit of advice when I lived on Maui years ago. Actually, if your kids show an interest, show them safely how to do dangerous things. So as they get older, they don't actually have to express that in a very destructive way via alcohol or drugs or something like that. When you have a new child, also, you have a lot of sick thoughts of all the ways that your kids can be hurt, like sick, right? Yeah. And I used to be like, oh, what's wrong with me? And I don't want to call that energy into my life and stuff. And then what you realize, in a way, it might be a biological setting to get, especially because your children, when they're little, they're so vulnerable, is for you to pay attention because they are vulnerable. And they can get hurt easily. And it's really a way to cue you up to really, like, you have to pay attention. But that we can go through this, we can do all the right things, and things are going to happen. And that's like a hard thing to accept, but also it's part of the story. Like, we're not really in charge. We must do our job and we must show up and do it. If we think we're going to control everything that happens to them, their own pain and suffering, all of these, who they're going to choose, by the way, to be, we're delusional. I think that when you express that faith and you are doing all the parts that you are in charge of, maybe they can end up in a much bigger, greater place than we could have ever hoped for them, that faith, you know?
Thanks a ton, Gabby, for your time and for sharing all your wisdom. And where can people find out more about you?
Oh, yeah.
I'm at Gabby Reese on Instagram. I have a podcast called The Gabby Reese Show because I'm such an original title maker. And yeah, I'm around.
Hey there, Rian Doris here with the Flow Research Collective. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Flow Research Collective Radio. I know Stephen and I had a real treat interviewing Gabby and getting to hear her thoughts along with Dr. Sarah Sarkis's thoughts on everything peak performance, flow, and parenting. Now, if you're enjoying Flow Research Collective Radio at the moment, would love if you'd take 30 seconds or so to drop a quick review if you're listening to this on the Apple Podcast app. Just takes about 30 seconds and it helps us really make the most of the algorithms and get this material out to more people. So feel free to drop a review if you've got a moment. And for now, huge thank you for listening and stay tuned until the next episode.